going up. Curtain going up.
Places, please. Overture, stand by.
I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. Yankee Doodle, do or die. A real live nephew of my Uncle Sam, born on the 4th of July.
He's got a Yankee Doodle sweetheart. She's his Yankee Doodle joy. Yankee Doodle came to London just to ride the pony. He is a Yankee Doodle boy.
Part of me really wants to start this particular episode with a yeehaw, but I don't do yeehaws very well. Like I guess
think
that's
you were going to sing Yankee Doodle Dandy for us.
No, I'm not going to inflict that on people. I do not have a yodeling singing voice at
all. I just want a recording of it so I can hold it over you all time. I can blackmail you into whatever I want. I will release this to everyone you love.
Yeah. No, look, people who know me have suffered enough.
Fair enough.
Welcome to another episode of Awards Don't Matter. We are talking about Yankee Doodle Dandy. My name is Andrew. I'm joined by that other voice that you hear is my co-host, Dave.
From America, the Yankee Doodle Dandy of this podcast, obviously.
Yeah. Now, I want to, behind the scenes kind of stuff. You originally sent me a text saying, I think we should just do one episode this time around. And then you watch Yankee Doodle Dandy, and I believe your text message was something along the lines of, I guess we can do Yankee Doodle Dandy. So, we can do Yankee Doodle Dandy if you like.
Yes.
And I said, such reluctance there. So, why were you so reluctant to be talking about a film that celebrates America, Dave?
America fucking sucks, that's why. So, I think it was like twofold. So, first of all, I didn't know anything about this movie. I just knew the title. I know the song, of course. And I was like, well, that sounds like it's going to be fucking terrible. Even though it's on, like, all these best of lists, I was like, and James Cagney singing and dancing? I don't know. So, sight unseen, I was like, let's just do Mrs. Miniver. And then I watched this and Mrs. Miniver back to back, and I was like, okay, we got to do more than just Mrs. Miniver, because I'm not going to have enough to say about that movie. Maybe I could talk more about Yankee Doodle Dandy. So that's where that came from.
Yeah, I really like this film a lot, and I am genuinely surprised how I like this. I don't know. Like you, going into it, I was like, this sounds stupid. I knew the song Yankee Doodle Dandy, but it just sounds so, like, it sounds childlike in a way.
Yes,
like,
yes.
It sounds,
yes.
And I don't say that to diminish child films, kid films.
I do. Yeah. Diminish them. They're shit.
But I'm just like, I think that I'd always steer clear of it because of the fact that I was like, all right, is this going to be Chitty Chitty Bang Bang but with James Cagney? Well, it's not. It's not. It's a surprisingly adult
There is no flying car in this. That is true.
No, but maybe that might have made it even better, and maybe it would have won then.
Yeah, that's what the Academy was looking for.
Yeah, this is about George M. Cohan, who was played by James Cagney, and my experience with James Cagney has been all of those gangster films. So just like you, I was a bit like, singing and dancing James Cagney, is this going to work? Is it going to do anything at all? Oh, he won Best Actor. Oh, okay, well, maybe it might do. And sure as shit, like, he is bloody good in this. He sings and dances like no other, and not only that, he imitates, from what I was reading, he imitates the style of Cohan's sort of body skew if, where he's like, his body is at like, a certain angle as he dances. He does that so darn well. I love this film a lot. Even though everything that I said about Mrs. Miniver applies to this film, that is propaganda, it is one of the characters, his beautiful, loving wife in this particular film, who's so wonderfully presented here, is actually an amalgamation of Cohan's two wives, so she didn't
and neither
even
of them
exist.
Have her name. Neither of them have the name of the
Which I was just like, when I did all of this reading afterwards, and I get so shitty, like, when we're talking about Life of Emile Zola, I'm like, oh, I'm so shitty about the fact that they omitted all of this other stuff that would have actually made the story a little bit more fleshed out and important. And especially if I'm coming to this particular narrative, you know, not knowing anything about this particular narrative of Cohan, logically I want to get the truth. But on the same hand, this is done with such gusto and heart, and also the support of Cohan himself as well. So he's clearly a bit like, all right, you know, you can fudge my life a little bit as long as the truth and the truth within the story itself feels genuine and feels honest. And I think that's what I like about this film so much. Mm. It feels genuine and honest. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about James Cagney for a second.
He's so good.
I'm still stunned by this performance. Like you, my only connection to Jimmy Cagney is either like really bad impressions of him by comedians, you know, the You Dirty Rat and all that good stuff. Watching these gangster movies. So I was like, and this is not in any way that kind of role. So I was definitely concerned as I pressed play on this. But like, man, he won me over like immediately. Like as soon as he shows up, you're just like so taken by him. He's like, he's just such a wonderful, warm presence in this movie. And the thing I loved most about it, and this sounds like an underhanded compliment, but I promise you that it's not, is that they don't have him belt out ballads in this. It's like half singing, half speaking, all attitude, and it really, really works. And it kind of pulls you along. I think I love musicals, but I think one of the things that keeps people distant from musicals is we can't relate to someone who can sing at that register and sing that well. And it feels like, okay, this is no longer real. Whereas this feels like a real man. It feels like a real person. And his dancing is incredible. Just a wow performance all the way through. And I find it really interesting because I think this movie has all the faults that I complained of the rest of the nominees of this year. It is aggressively nice. It has very little conflict that isn't solved immediately. And yet, I'm okay with it in this movie. This movie has a kind of propulsion to it. It's always pushing itself forward. And a lot of it has helped that it's like the narrative is set up, is kind of bookended by present day. Right? And it doesn't, you don't really understand where the timeline is until the end of the movie, but it gives it this forward momentum. Like, we've got to get back to that moment. We know we got to get back to that. So even if there's lulls in the narrative, you're still going to be like, okay, but we're still headed somewhere. Where a lot of these other movies, you're like, I don't know where we're headed, and I don't really care. Like, this is just, But Yankee Doodle Dandy is not like that at all. Like, it is. And I'm glad I know anything about this man walking into this movie, because I think it really would have colored my experience of it. And I did like a tiny bit of research, and then I just stopped. I was like, I don't need to know. Like, I'm just going to leave this pure in my mind. Like, it doesn't affect anyone who's alive right now, so it's fine. Let's just go with this. And, you know, there's so many, like, I talk about it being nice, and in conflict. Like, one of the biggest conflicts in the movie for, like, 9 seconds is he, like, writes this song for his wife and then gives it to this superstar to play it. And and her reaction is like, yeah, that's okay. Everything's good.
That's She's sweet. Like, I knew you were going to do that anyway. Like,
right. And I'm like, that's
yeah.
And, you know, the conflict with his family and with his parents leaving the business. And then, like, yeah, that's okay, though. Like, the whole movie is like that, where it's like a conflict happens and then it's just, like, wrapped up at the snap of your fingers. And you're like, oh, I guess we're going on to the next thing now, I guess. Like, but it's so genuine that, like, it's really hard for me to, like, be critical of it, because it, like, wears its heart on its sleeve so clearly. And it's just like, I don't know, how can you be mad at this guy? Like, it's just like you can't hold that anger in. And like, there is propaganda here, but like, I think it's like weirdly handled very well, like, because it knows what it is, right? And it never, I don't feel like, at least, it ever gets preachy. Or Mrs. Miniver, I mean, legitimately, like, gets preachy with a priest. Like, it is just so on the nose. And this is just like, yeah, I'm going to give you my message, but you know what, guys? Let's have a good time. And you do. Like, you get swept up in it.
But I think the preachiness of this story or of Cohan's story comes from his music. And it comes from, you know, I think part of the reason why this film exists is because of his Congressional Medal of Honor that he gets, which is that, you know, that particular, basically the motif that carries the story. As you're saying, that's that goal that we're working towards. And I think of something like The Great Ziegfeld, which is missing that kind of purpose, that reason for existing, other than being a three-hour bloated mess of how good was this guy? Whereas this at least is like, hey, Cohan made some great music and he was earnest and honest and all this kind of stuff, but he also did it in a nationalistic kind of manner. And one of the things which I've written down is that what surprised me the most about Yankee Doodle Dandy is that it made me feel good about America again. And that's a genuine surprise because
it's hard to do.
It's hard to do. And a lot of the patriotism and the, you know, stars and stripes and, you know, we want you kind of thing is here in this particular film. And that's a lot of the stuff that certainly as a foreigner, I look at America and go, oh, just turn it down a notch, guys. Like, you don't have to love your flag that much. Like, it's just a flag, you know, like, but it's there, but it's done in a passionate, sweeping up with everybody manner. It sweeps up the whole entire nation. Whereas nowadays it feels like I am waving the American flag and it is an assault, an attack on everybody who disagrees with me because I stand for freedom, that kind of thing. That's kind of the message I get from America. But this doesn't have that. It's like, it's a very unifying narrative.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that what it comes down to is that there is an honesty there in those performances, an honesty in Cagney, an honesty in Joan Leslie, who plays Mary, his wife. And there is a respect and a passion for each other. There's a genuine, one of the films that we talked about, The Thin Man, where you can tell that these two people genuinely love each other. They genuinely want to spend time with each other. And every time that George and Mary are together, you feel that she loves what he does. He loves her undyingly. And, you know, there is just this wonderful compassion and beauty and love for each other. And that extends to his country. That's why he writes those songs. It extends to, you know, the stage. That's why he sings those songs and unites everybody. He's a showman in the purest sense of the word. I think that is why this is an enduring classic for me. It makes sense. We will talk about Michael Curtis in the future, literally the next episode. He won Best Director for Casablanca, which to me, as great as Casablanca is, it partially feels like an apology for, look, sorry, Michael, we should have probably given it to you for Yankee Doodle Dandy too. But he is such a great director in the manner that he's able to tie everything together. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think what I want to talk about is so endings are really hard. Making a good ending to a movie, especially a movie like this, frankly, because it is, in a way, like, despite the bookends of this movie, kind of a meandering movie. It's like, so then this happens, and then some time passes, and now I'm doing this, and isn't this fun, and here's this little song to distract you so you don't notice that this movie has no narrative focus. Like, we're just gonna move forward. But man, the ending of this movie really works. So you get the Congressional Medal of Honor, you get the repetition of the kind of old line, you know, my father thanks you, my mother thanks you, and I thank you. And it's like, and there's tears in his eyes, and it's like, oh my God. Like, the rest of the performance is really good and really fun, but there are very few moments of like emotional power in that performance. But it's like it's all funneled to this one moment, and you're just like, wow, like this really hits. And it explains the meandering nature of the movie, right? It is all about him and how he got to this moment, right? And then the ending after that, with the over there moment where, you know, they're marching through the street and singing over there, and the guy doesn't recognize, he doesn't know Cohan, and he says, hey, you're not singing, you should sing with us. And then, like, you see him joining in, and it's just like such a wonderful moment, and it brings back, you know, his creation, and here it is out in the world. Over there,
don't you remember this song? Seems to me I do. Well, I don't hear anything.
Ends, and it's like, oh my god, what a perfect, like, as I'm watching this movie, I'm like, you know, 90% through it, and I'm like, how do you wrap this up? Like, there's no way that this is going to be satisfying, because all conflicts just get solved really quickly, and everybody's kind of happy, and it's fine, and then you get the moment of, like, the youngsters not knowing who he is, and him kind of trying to go back and remember what it's like, and I'm like, how do you do this? How do you get to a point where the credits are going to roll? And then, like, magic. Those two scenes happen. And it's interesting, because those two scenes can almost happen at any point, and then the movie ends, and it's great, right? It just, like, it solidifies everything that we've been doing, and, like, you know, Jimmy Cagney, like, singing that at all of his heart, right? Because a lot of his singing and dancing is so, of course, performative and presentational throughout the rest of the movie. And that's maybe the one moment where it's not, where he's really feeling what everyone else is feeling, and he is a part of it. He is a part of structure. He is a part of that passion going out into the world. And it's just like, yeah, there's his moment. We've been waiting for this. Like, you've been waiting for it as an audience, and you didn't even know you were. And that is what a great ending does, where it ends in such a perfect way that you're like, yes, this is what it was supposed to be. And I could not have told you that 5 minutes ago. It is not predictable. It's not, it just is right. And you feel it in your bones. Like, you're just like, yeah, you hit it. You know, and there's very few movies like that, that really, it's one of my favorite endings of any movie I've ever seen. Like,
it's a brilliant ending. Just, yeah. Works. I think part of why that works as well is because, you know, one of the things that artists or authors or directors talk about is that once they've made something and they've released it out into the world, it's no longer theirs. You know, they've put it out there and that's it. It's no longer theirs. And I think this is a wonderful personification of that, because he's written this song over there and now the military parade is singing it, and it doesn't matter if people recognize him or not. The author of the song becomes redundant because
the
song
work is what matters, right?
Yeah. And that, I think, is what it's what kind of strengthens Yankee Doodle Dandy as well, because it doesn't matter if there's, you know, fictionalization of his life. It doesn't matter if there's fudging of the truth, because the honesty and the purpose and the reason behind his singing and dancing is there, you know, and the strength of his music is there. And that's really all that matters. It's the story of his music, not really the story of Cohan himself.
Yeah.
And that's beautiful. One of the things I loved was that the whole Yankee Doodle Dandy sequence. Like, I never actually listened to the song properly before, so I didn't know what it was about.
Yeah, because you hear the chorus and you're like, this is ridiculous, let's move on. Yes.
But it's enduring, and I think that's the thing, is the way that it's permeated into culture. That even if you've never heard it before in its entirety or the original song, you know that chorus, you know the refrain there.
It's immediately in your head.
And then we see this sequence, and it's so wonderful. You know, it's about this guy who wants to ride a horse, and it's just like, oh shit, that's what the song's about. Okay, cool. Nice. Yeah.
So for you, were there any moments maybe early on in the movie where you felt like, oh, I don't know? Like, for me, it's like the, like, whole I was born on the 4th of July thing. Like, I was like, oh, we are really hitting the fucking Yankee stuff hard in this movie. But it's like, but
see, they even fudge his birthday. He wasn't even born on the 4th of July.
Nope. But it makes him a Yankee Doodle Dandy, Andrew. See? Yeah. It's like, but when it happens, like, and this is the very beginning of the movie, like, this is within the first 5-10 minutes. And I had this moment of, oh no, like, oh God, this is going to be so painful. And I think mainly because of Cagney, it's not. He can keep nonsense for 2 hours in this movie. Like I said, there's not these big dramatic moments, right? Except for the Congressional Medal of Honor. But in some ways, it should not work. This movie should not work, and it's very, very strange that it does, because in a lot of ways, that scene comes absolutely out of nowhere. Other than the fact that we prefaced it with the very beginning of the movie, that we know this is happening, in terms of the narrative, it totally comes out of nowhere, and you're like, oh, I guess we're here now. And yet, when that line hits, it is so powerful, and you're like, and it's, I love when movies do this, because so many movies, when a moment is emotional, I can track it. Right? Because I've watched enough movies at this point. I've watched hundreds of movies at this point. So you could be like, okay, they really clue here in minute 7. And then minute 23, they reinforced it. And then at the end of the movie, yeah, and this really works. Right? But sometimes moments that shouldn't work do. Right? And this is one of those where you're like, yeah, nothing about this should work. And here we are. And for me also, there's something about musicals that really get me. Like, I love a good musical, man. Like, it just really, really works for me. And I think for me, it's because music ties into emotions really and really intense for me. Like, if someone sings about something sad or about something happy, I feel that feeling so much deeper. So like, I'll watch a musical and I'll just be like, on the verge of emotional outbursts at all moments, right? Because it just really hooks into that human thing that we react to song, we react to music. So I think maybe that has something to do with it. So when he, like, you know, drops down and says this line, that is a line he has said 100 times in his life, it means so much more because he's leaving the singing and dancing behind for a minute. Like, even when he has that moment where he tries to go to war, he's still performing. Right? He's still singing and dancing, going, look at what I can do. You can bring me into the army. I can dance. I can do this. Can any of your soldiers do this? It's still a big performance. And that end, those two endings, I think are the only moments in the movie, maybe besides when he is professing his love to his wife, that it's not a performance. And that means something in a movie like this.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, leading back to what you're asking about, I didn't expect it to be this way. Like, it is so distinctly patriotic. And I started watching The Pride of the Yankees. And
you didn't
I gave it 5 minutes. And I was like, there is just a feeling of that particular film that is like so, it's saccharine. And so,
yes, I agree.
And it doesn't know that it is as well, because it thinks that it's being an honest narrative, whereas I think that with this, it knows that it's saccharine. It knows that it's what it's trying to do. It is fully aware of all of that. But I want to push back at something, though. I think that Cagney, while he is great, I think the emotionality, because we don't get to see Cagney properly for a few minutes, you know, his parents, Walter Huston in particular, I think carries so much at the heart of this particular narrative, and especially as this traveling troupe of people, the four Cohans who are basically going out and entertaining people, these two kids, and sure, there's a little bit of a cringeworthy moment, literally the only moment that stopped this from being a 5-star film, putting it as a 4.5-star film, was this blink and you miss it moment where the whole entire family walks out on stage in blackface and you're like, oh no, but that happened, you know, that is the time and stuff like that. They don't lean into it, you know, it's something that happened, okay, as terrible it is, it's there. But then that family aspect of it, the Cohan family, is what I think makes this such a beautiful thing, because it is, he's doing it because he knows that his family is talented, and you know, there is a warmth and there is a joy to seeing them out on the stage and entertaining and dancing and all this kind of stuff. And one of the early moments, which I really like, was the way that young George Cohan pushes back against people and they're like, no, people are coming to see me and all this kind of stuff. And that young kid does a really good Cagney impersonation as well.
He does.
He's like, yeah. He's like, you know, I don't think you understand. And that's, I think that leans into the older Cohan's understanding and recognition that as a young boy, he maybe threatened his family's prosperity and, you know, the possibility of them being big. And that's him walking away from everything and saying, you know, making up a lie and saying, oh no, I've been signed up for this. And look, I'm sorry, guys, you're going to have to, like, when he hears that conversation at the dinner table and they're all like, look, George is really screwing things up for you. You got to do something about that. And he's like, he just comes up with something on the moment. He's like, I'm going to walk away from this and tell them a lie that I have a job to walk to, and then effectively goes and brings that into fruition. Whether it's the truth or not, it really doesn't matter because of that honesty, because of that earnestness. And it shows what kind of character Cohan is, and it shows what kind of family the Cohans are. And that in itself is just, it doesn't matter if this is how they were as actual people in real life. It really doesn't matter because these are fictionalized versions, and the characters that are on screen, the real fictional characters like Mary, for example, carry so much truth and heart that you kind of, they feel aspirational. And that's what lingers for me.
Sure.
You talk about musicals in a way, and one of the best musicals of this year, where, you know, in 2021, we're getting a lot of musicals, is In the Heights.
And 5 stars, my favorite movie this year. It's great.
It's very good, and I think...
It's better than Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Oh, I don't know about that. I'll be rewatching Yankee Doodle Dandy before I rewatch In the Heights. I really enjoyed In the Heights, though.
I think I've watched that 3 times already, so yeah. We're... which is fine. It's fine.
Yeah. But I'm curious because, you know, as we have watched these early films, we're in the 15th Best Picture and all this kind of stuff, there have been a lot of films that are about these showmen, you know, these stage people, George Cohan, the great Ziegfeld and things like that. And, you know, there is a real respect for people, the songwriters and the people of the stage. Do you think we'll eventually get one from Lin-Manuel Miranda? Like, it seems an inevitability, surely.
That's a good question. It's really, Lin-Manuel, it's really interesting because there's been like a weird like backlash against him.
Yeah, I know,
I think he's been so in the public eye and so popular, and like I want no part of that backlash because I legitimately think he's a genius. Like the things that he comes up with, the things that he does, incredible. Like I love his work. So I'm not the person who's going to be like, oh, he's obnoxious. Of course he's obnoxious. Like anyone that talented and that successful is going to be obnoxious. That just comes with the territory, man. You think Andrew Lloyd Webber is a fucking prince among men? Like he's probably a total jackass, and that's fine. You've earned the right to be kind of a dick when you are that good at something. I wonder.
Yes, when you write Cats, you can be whatever kind of person you want. Sorry.
That's the one. I would only say that there won't be, probably just because he'll write it himself. I think he'll probably write the story of his own life. But that actually brings me to a question I have for you, Andrew. So you have gone on and on and on about this episode about how it doesn't matter if this is a true story.
It doesn't. Because it's so good.
This is what Cohan was like. Oh, so is that... I'm wondering what the line is. Because there have been other movies we've covered on here that are biopics, right? And you're like, this is nonsense. That's not what that person was really like. How dare they lie to us? How dare they not include this bit? So is it just like the quality of the movie that changes it? Or is there some dividing line between entertainer and like politician, and like what's the line for you? I'm curious.
First of all, I want to say fuck you for holding me to account for what I've been saying in the past.
How dare I?
Secondly, no, I think it. I think all right. Specifically, let's talk about Life of Emile Zola. I think when it comes to
that is what I was referencing.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when you're talking about something so pointed as, you know, hatred of Jewish people and things like that. Mm-hmm. Like, that's something that I would like to know about somebody, you know, in a film called The Life of Emile Zola. I think that when it comes to something like Yankee Doodle Dandy, as I mentioned before, this is less about, sure, it is about Cohan's life, but it's about his music and the legacy of his music and what his music does to people. And I don't mind that they fudge the truth in this because it is not, it's not about him being a revolutionary or anything like that, him changing the world, which is effectively Emile Zola was. It's about something that changed France and changed things that went on. I think there is a line, and it's hard to kind of pinpoint exactly what it is because of the fact that it's, you know, there are stories that there are films that are about true stories that do add in fictionalized elements. You know, Braveheart, for example, we'll eventually get to that. But, like, that's got, like, that's got characters who weren't even alive in the same time in scenes together. And it's like, okay, but is that, does that take away from the emotionality within the film itself? If there is trying to reach some kind of authenticity about the narrative that they're telling, is it enough? Well, for me, it feels like it's enough that they have reached the emotionality of what they're intending to do.
Mm.
I don't think The Life of Emile Zola managed to do that at all. I think that Yankee Doodle Dandy does. And again, I haven't looked deeply into Cohan's life. If he was an abuser or something like that, then, you know, things might change. But there is an honesty and a truth to his songs, to Cagney's performance as him, and coming back to that aspect, the familial aspect of this. Whereas something like Emile Zola is just feels so, you know, it feels like it is full of self-importance because this thing happened and we must detail it and it's, you know, get it documented and stuff like that. And it's like, yeah, okay. Whereas Yankee Doodle Dandy feels like, hey guys, come around, gather around the campfire. Let me tell you this story. You know, it's casual. Yeah. You know, it feels casual. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I definitely agree with what you're saying. I think when a movie about a real person is so self-serious and is making a very dramatic point, then I think you have a responsibility to be truthful about who that person was. Like, if you're going to talk about mistreatment of groups of people, and then you're skipping over stuff about that person's life or about what was going on at the time, then it feels very, like, intellectually and artistically dishonest.
Yeah.
Whereas a movie like this is really just about having a good time and, you know, a life where gave his all to the theater, to our enjoyment. So it's not really about, like, I mean, it's not like you're making a movie about Malcolm X or, you know, like, or JFK, like, where it's like it has this huge impact on world events and blah, blah, blah. It's just about connection and love and family and marriage and all these wonderful things. So, like, yeah, I'm mostly just giving you shit by calling you out on the carpet like this. But yeah, I think there is a difference, but I think it's such a subtle difference that sometimes it can be hard to pinpoint. Like, why is dishonesty okay here but not okay here? And I think dishonesty in movies that are self-serious, I think, can really do some damage. Mm. And dishonesty in the life of a performer, you know, that's part of being a performer. Yeah. There's some dishonesty in that, you know, in the way you present yourself. So I didn't, even after I found out things about him that, like, oh, this isn't quite what they showed, like, who cares? I had a good time, you know? I had a blast watching this, and that's what this movie was designed for. It was designed to make you happy. It was not designed to, like, make you think about your life and where the country was at the time. It was designed to feel light, and it does that very well.
Yeah, I think of something like Shirley, which came out last year, I think it was, and that is a very self-serious film, but it's completely fictionalized in a lot of ways, but it evokes who Shirley Jackson was as a person, by all accounts.
Yep.
It evokes who her husband was as a person, and it evokes what her work was, and I think, while I don't love that film as much as other people do, I respect it a lot because of the manner that it works as an echo of who Shirley Jackson was as a person. Much in the same way that Yankee Doodle Dandy works as an echo of Cohan as a person.
Yeah.
I don't think that, you know, Emile Zola feels like an echo of anything. You know, I don't think that it just feels like a presentation of, this happened, we've got to get it on film. And it just happened to win Best Picture. And so I think it comes down to authenticity. You know, it comes down to a truth, an emotional truth. And that varies from person to person. I know that for some people, maybe the patriotism that is in Yankee Doodle Dandy might be too much. You know, it might be so like, oh, God, born on the 4th of July. Oh, God, you know, stars and stripes and stuff like that.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
It is. But I enjoyed it. You know, and I think this is a really important film in a lot of ways because of all those aspects, because there is so much life to it. And it comes back to one of the early things that I said, it is that there are manners and ways of loving a country or learning to enjoy the existence of a country. And, you know, we're in the 21st century. No modern country has, you know, clean hands or anything. You know, they all have their own turmoils and things like that. So, you know, we can look at different countries and go, well, that's nice, but this. And, you know, certainly America has more crosses on its ledger than it should do. But I enjoyed this because it made me remember why, as a kid, like, growing up, I always wanted to go to Dallas. Don't know why I wanted to go to Dallas, you know, but I always wanted to go to Dallas for some reason. It just seemed like the place to be. Everything seemed bigger and larger than life in Dallas. And Yankee Doodle Dandy kind of captured that feeling of, like, can you imagine America? What a country. What a fantastic place. Anything is possible there. And that's what this film captured for me. And in the same manner that In the Heights captured that for me, because I think that that is a film that is equally patriotic, but from a different strain of patriotism, which is why I brought up Lin-Manuel Miranda earlier, because I think that particular film feels very similar to this, you know, in a lot of ways, where there is an authenticity.
Except it's better. That's the only difference.
Sure. It's got its problems, but, you know, there is...
It does not. I disagree.
Well, no, but in the sense... I mean, in the sense that there is... It doesn't accurately represent the area that... You know, the people that live in that area.
Sure.
You know, and that's a huge discussion that's been online, and I'm grateful that it existed online, because, fuck, as an Australian, I would watch that film and go, cool, that is what that area of New York looks like. But it's not. And so, you know, but the emotional truth that that film carries, and it sings, and
it sings, he says. Nice.
It's just rolled off my tongue. It's like, So does this film matter then, Dave? Even though you think that In the Heights is better, why are we comparing this film that's 70 years older than this?
Yes. Yeah. I think it does matter. I think it, it's really uplifting to me that this is more remembered than Mrs. Miniver.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like, hey, awards don't matter.
Yeah.
Like the title of our show.
Oh.
Sometimes the greatness just shines through. Like, this is a movie that's on, like, the AFI top 10 of American films ever made. And, like, would I put it on that list? No. But it's very good. So, this one definitely matters. And it also, like, I think our discussion really hammered home the idea that, like, you know, not all biopics are the same, and they don't all have to operate by the same rules. And I think it's important to remember that with any kind of genre. So, yeah, it definitely matters. I would agree with that.
Yeah, definitely. Without a doubt. I think it matters a lot. Yeah, I think it's a really wonderful film. And, you know, it makes me, like, when I think about William Wyler as a director, I'm like, I forget that he exists, you know, sometimes, because the discussion so much about this particular era is often not about those kinds of directors. You know, they're the subtle kind of directors. Much in the same way...
But he keeps coming up, doesn't he?
He certainly keeps on coming up, yeah.
Yeah.
Much in the same way that Michael Curtiz is like... He directed one of the greatest films of all time, Casablanca, which we're going to be discussing in the next episode.
I can't recall that movie. Is that a well-known movie that we're covering next time?
No, which is why this podcast exists, to elevate those smaller films that nobody's ever heard of.
Yes, like Casablanca. Yes, absolutely. Love it.
But it is also to elevate, like, Yankee Doodle Dandy and Casablanca is like, and of course, Mildred Pierce as well later on. It highlights how important these kinds of directors are. And I just wish that the conversation, you know, we've talked about Ninotchka as well. Like, and I continually kind of raise the question of, like, why that film isn't more widely recognized and celebrated.
That should be on the AFI's top list.
Exactly. But that's why we do this thing, is to kind of highlight why these films are important. And I'm excited to be able to dig into Casablanca again. I've only seen it the once.
You know? Yeah, I mean, I probably haven't seen that in 20 years. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to rewatch. I'm excited for sure.
Yeah, I'm a little bit disappointed that we will be recording it earlier. But in October here in Perth, we have a film double. Like, we have these film doubles that happen on Monday nights, and one of the upcoming film doubles is Casablanca and Gaslight, which seems like a really good double. I think I'll go to it anyway, even though I'll be seeing Casablanca very soon. But yeah, that's what we'll be doing next. I'm excited for it, to say the least. So yeah, where can people find you online as well?
Yeah, just find me on Twitter, at Darn That Dave, if you want to hear any of my other 1,900 other podcasts or read my work on In Session Film. I will be posting them all on that Twitter site, so at Darn That Dave.
Cool. This does feel like I was looking through your podcast universe the other day, as I was like looking and seeing what else I should be listening to, because, you know, doing a podcast with Dave is like,
It's not enough.
I need to know who my competition is. These other people that you're talking with.
And my other podcast boyfriends. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. And then I realized, no, I should not be seeing them as competition. I should be seeing them as brethren. We're part of the Dave universe, the Dave podcast universe.
Yeah. I like it. Excellent.
And then I imagine somebody trying to do like a lost timeline of where things pop up and stuff like that. But nonetheless, yeah, look, I do this podcast because I enjoy talking to Dave about films, and I highly recommend listening to his other shows. But if you want to listen to more of us, Awards Don't Matter, and listen to previous episodes at thecurb.com.au. All right, guys, we'll see you on the next episode. Bye.
I'm 18. I sing and I dance, and I'm going to New York. Should I? Oh, Mr. Cohan, you're so old and so experienced in the theater, so fatherly. Do you think it's wise? I mean, my being 18, singing and dancing, going to New York?
Well, that's very wise. I mean, being 18 is very wise. And as for New York, the four Cohans open there this fall with their new show, with a new cyclorama and two carloads of scenery.
Really? When are you leaving here?
Tomorrow night, right after the show.
Oh, I can't leave till Wednesday. Graduate from high school Tuesday.
Oh, that's too bad.
Oh, Georgie, excuse me. You haven't forgotten we have a date tonight, have you?
Oh, no, of course not. We're going roller skating.
Roller skating on a night like this? Why, there's a moon out. I'll be ready in 5 minutes.
Pipperino, isn't she?
Yes. Is she your daughter?
No, I'm not married.
Your niece, perhaps.
Oh, she's just a kid with the show. We've been dating.
Isn't she a little too young for you?
Oh, no, she's getting along in years. She's 17.